Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
It's also a good weekend to be indoors. Maybe Cubs fans are glad that the Cubs convention is this weekend because there's not a lot to do outside. This is the kind of weather you get. And so Cubs fans will rally at the convention to this weekend, today and tomorrow. And then Sox Fest is next weekend at McCormick Place, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's correct.
That'll be a big hoo-ha. The yes, Ricketts sir. Will not be appearing at that one either.
No, they won't.
A better chance of seeing him at Sox Fest, frankly, than the Cubs convention, because nobody wants to hear or see them at the Cubs convention. Elif gave you a baseball quiz for me, right?
I do have a baseball quiz for you, John.
Okay, since we have a short window here, Dave, if you don't mind, let's just do the questions after the break. Is that okay with
you? That's fine. I can fine-tune them that way.
Well, I don't think you need to tune them too finely to get them past me. But let's see if I've been paying sufficient attention. And our listeners have, too. You think you've been following these stories of late. Let's just see how good we are. This Altuve story is just fascinating to me. It is an example of where baseball or any entity out there, it could be a company, it could be a politician, a country, it could be anything. If you think you're done with this, guess what? The internet and the world will tell you when we're done with
That's
this.
Correct.
So baseball can say, okay, we're going to fine the team $5 million and we're going to not vacate their World Series championship for the Astros. Yeah, that ought to solve that. Oh, huh. And the Altuve video out there, Jose Altuve, after hitting a home run and not wanting his teammates to tear his shirt off when he crosses home plate as a celebration, looks very suspicious to a lot of people. Is he hiding something under his jersey? Is there a little device there or something like that that would have signaled to him from the dugout whether or not a pitch was going to be a fastball or a curveball? Now, that's crazy talk, but that's what people are talking about. And if it's not even true, not one iota if that is true, it doesn't matter to the internet. It doesn't matter to people. They're having fun with it, and they're speculating about
yep,
it.
Yep.
And the more they do, the more it looks like, well, do you know, they're onto something here.
Well, they're going back and looking at the video of him after he hit the home run and saying, well, he didn't want to take his jersey off. He didn't want them to tear his jersey off.
Yeah.
And he said something about being shy.
Oh, yeah. Well, Elif, we do have the audio of him being interviewed after that home run. Do you have that? Jose, we'll play it after the break, and then you give me the quiz, okay?
Yes.
To tell me if this passes the smell test. Okay, so this is Jose Altuve, who's, you know, patient zero right now on this cheating scandal for the Houston Astros. They won the World Series in 2017, and I don't know if it's true or not, but people think that maybe he was getting an electronic buzz on a device under his jersey. And that was tipping the pitches to him. If they're using technology, I guess that's plausible. Yesterday, we played for you the audio of them banging the trash can lid in the dugout. Like people have metal trash cans in dugouts, but they did. And two whacks on the trash can lid would indicate that it was an off-speed pitch. And maybe one whack would indicate it was a fastball. They had a system worked out. You could hear it. We played that audio. This is Altuve being interviewed by Ken Rosenthal on Fox TV in the ALCS after he hit a walk-off home run and he would not open up his jersey. In fact, he sort of cinched it around his neck tight. You wondered if his teammates were going to tear it off in celebration after the home run.
Going around the bases, what was going through your mind?
Well, running around the bases, the only thing I was thinking was just thanking God and just thinking that we're going to the World Series once again.
You asked the teammates not to tear your shirt. Why?
What's that?
Did you ask your teammates not to tear your shirt? Why was that?
I don't know. I'm too shy. Last time they did that, I got in trouble with my wife.
And also, I have a device that is indicating the pitches to me. I think a tell, as they say, is that when you repeat the question, people, this is, they say, one way that you can tell if somebody's not being entirely truthful. Ask me what time it is, Dave.
John, what time is it?
I'm sorry, what was the question?
John, what time is it?
I heard you fine the first time, but now that gives me time to formulate an answer that isn't going to implicate me.
Right.
By the way, it's 9:22.
Thank you.
Okay, you've got questions for me, right?
I do.
All right.
Is there music or anything?
No. Just...
Okay. Number one, in the last 3 days, how many former World Series champion managers have been fired? One or two?
Okay. Two.
Two is correct.
Ha!
How'd you know that?
Go ahead. Give me another one.
Okay.
I'm on a roll.
Speaking of cheating, how many full seasons was A-Rod suspended from baseball for using steroids? One full season or two?
Oh. One full season or two for A-Rod. I'm going to go with one.
Do you hear something? One is correct. Okay, so you're 2-0. Sox Fest is next weekend. Is it 1, 2, or 3 days long?
I think I know the answer to this one.
You hearing something in your headphones?
I'm just kind of tickly today. Yeah. I believe it's 2, Dave.
That 2? You're right again, man. You know your stuff.
It's a gift.
It's unbelievable. Cubs convention is this weekend. Chris Bryant's new deal will pay him just over $18 million for 1 year or $18 million for 2 years, John.
It'd be 1 year, Dave.
You're right again.
What is that vibrating sound I hear?
I didn't know. Too, I thought Dave. That was just me hearing it.
No, I'm hearing it now, too.
What was that question?
And the final question in the quiz.
Yes.
When the Astros won the World Series in 2017,
yes.
It was their first, their second, or their third World Series win.
I believe this bit is about run its course, but let me think of what the answer is. I'm going to say their first.
You're correct. So you're really knowledgeable on all this stuff.
Seem to be tapped into some cosmic source of information there. You think this thing is over? You think that this is as bad as it's going to get?
I think it's going to continue. Yeah. I mean, I think that more things are going to come out. But I think when you have something like this, it's always that first one that seems the most impactful. And I think that unless something... some bigger bombshell were to come out.
Right.
If the players were wearing these devices, I mean, they've already said that they're not going to go after the players.
Right.
So what if they were? I mean, where does it leave us?
Yeah, I don't think they should go after the players. I've said all along, like we've been talking about this forever, but for the last few days as this story has evolved, my opinion has been that it's just an organizational thing, and that's how you tamp down on it. And I think a $5 million fine... Everybody's got $5 million. These guys do, right? I mean, $5 million, but what would be a big fine? $100 million? Or maybe ban them from the playoffs this year? They do that with college kids. College basketball and football programs, you could use a few years of opportunity to be in the playoffs.
That's true.
And that
That's
cripples
true.
A program because then you can't recruit kids who want to be in the playoffs or who want to have NFL careers. So we come down so hard on the Little League World Series team from Chicago, college kids who take a meal that they're not supposed to take, or coaches that look the other way. But boy, it comes to baseball and they're using electronic devices to cheat. Well, $5 million? Are you kidding me?
The traditional penalties handed down in college athletics have been things like postseason bans, bowl bans in college football, being stripped of scholarships. So maybe they lose. Well, see, here's the problem. You got the Players Association. You can't say you lose a roster spot because that's all collectively bargained.
Yeah.
But television revenue.
How about
gets
that?
Stripped from teams lose their share of TV revenue. Maybe that's something you do.
John says 630. I'm just wondering if the Cubs at the convention are going to have an interactive booth on how to steal signs. Be bad timing for that, or good timing for that. David, you're on WGN. Thanks for calling in. What can we do for you?
Good morning. I think the players need to be punished. If you cheated, then you need to be held accountable.
Yeah.
It's that simple. I don't tolerate cheating in any of the things that I have done in my life. And these are highly paid ball players that make a lot more than you and I combined times 10, probably.
You're right.
and they know they're cheating.
I think that's why they cheat, too. The stakes are so high. The money's so great. The pressure is so huge. But I'll take your point, David. Thank you for the phone call.
See, the money is that great. If you think about it, that really the money they get, the pool money they get for winning the World Series, whatever that comes out to,
right,
compared to what they make, it's kind of like talking about the $5 million the team has to cough up.
Right, the players can afford it. If you really want to hit them, you need to hit them harder than that, but they've already got a contract signed. Maybe you can't go after that. It's 9:27. We're going after news after this. Uh-oh, wait a minute. I just hit a button. Hey, good morning over there in the newsroom, Steve.
Hey, good morning. I'm here. Do you need me to start early?
This is an audible. Let me just mention what we're going to do, and then we will get to the news a little bit early. That is, in the next half hour, we're going to talk to an emergency room physician at Northwestern Medicine about the flu outbreak that is out there. Nobody at my house has the flu. I know some folks that have it. It's been very bad this year, not only in Chicago, but across the country. The number of people with the flu and the number of people who had died as a result of the flu, those numbers really did surprise me. So what do you look for? What do you do? And here's my question. Is it too late to get a flu shot? Who in this room got a flu shot? Did you get a flu shot?
I did.
Attaboy.
Yeah,
Mary,
did
you get your flu shot?
Oh, yes, definitely.
I always do. I didn't. So is it too late to get it?
And not too late.
Effective? Yeah, I think that's what they're going to say.
Yeah.
We'll let the doctor answer all of our questions. 1 to 5 inches of wintry mix are expected this afternoon. Steve's been keeping you posted on that. 3 to 5 is maybe the time that it'll start to fall and accumulate. Depending on where you live, you get snow, you get ice, you get maybe a mix of them. But 1 to 5 inches, maybe. But then 37 degrees, I think, is the high temperature. What was that on? Is that tomorrow that you're saying?
Yeah, it's tomorrow. So, but the temperatures will fall through the day.
Still, 37 to me is my is me being optimistic, Steve, because I'm hopeful that whatever we get will be sloshy enough or melted enough that it's not going to ruin our weekend or early next week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that would be optimal. And last thing we want is ice.
815, we've been talking about baseball. America has two. Hey, John, Jose Altuve of the Astros batting average during the World Series was .472 at home and .152 on the road. One would expect a possible difference, but that is an insane difference. Thank you, Brett. Wow. Gee, I wonder what would have happened at home that would have given him an advantage. Although during the regular season, the Astros were not that much better at home as opposed to on the road. Somebody pointed that out to me. Everybody's better at home, but what was the statistic? Maybe it was the team batting average was not much better at home versus on the road. Clearly they were up to something. By the way, you know how we wondered if Jose Altuve was getting a little buzz like that would indicate to him what the pitch was? 224 said, John, if you're going to keep doing those quizzes with Dave Ennett, how about this for a question? How many burgers have been sold at McDonald's? and then we just start running the buzzer.
Oh, there you,
you know,
go.
9 billion times. They used to have that up there. I don't know how many. Hey, Producer Ella, see if you can find that.
Once it got over 1 billion, I think they
stopped. Then they did like billions and billions sold. Yeah. Remember that? That was up there, but they couldn't keep track or they don't. Just see if you can find how many hamburgers has McDonald's sold, because they used to champion that on their signs.
Right.
And it got to billions.
But then they had different kinds of burgers.
Maybe that's
it,
too.
Because when they...
Do you count a filet of fish?
Is the Big Mac, is that
two
burgers or one burger?
Exactly.
I don't know. How many are there at a Big Mac? I don't know.
John, I think the Astros should be stripped of their title as the Little League team from Chicago was. Those kids were punished for the actions of unscrupulous adults. I 100% agree. 773 said the Astros should lose draft picks. Oh, that makes sense to me.
Well, that's sort of what... you can't take a roster spot per se, but a draft pick. But draft capital in baseball isn't quite. I mean, it is your building block, but you could overcome that.
Yeah, it's not a starting quarterback in the first round that's going to change the complexion of a team. 309 said, "Hey, John, it's good to hear you on the radio. I'm curious about something. After your dog Fred passed on, the dog you called Daisy is the one that was really scared of everything. And now apparently she's a happy dog in the Williams household. Fred, America's largest wiener dog, who I used to speak about years ago, passed on. He went to that big weenie roast in the sky. And then we've had a series of dogs, because then you get your replacement wiener. And then you get a series of replacement wieners to replace your replacement wieners. And then you get in a dog loop and you never escape." Mm-hmm. I turned to my son because he looked at some bad behavior he witnessed of my dog not that long ago. And I said, "Grant, this is your doing. When you were a little boy, you wanted a dog. We now have had dogs ever since because of you. We weren't itching to have a dog before you said, 'Dad, can we get a dog?' So we got a dog, and then he graduated and moved away. We still have dogs. So don't tell me about..." I don't know why I'm yelling at you, but this is just the conversation I had with my
Thank
son.
You.
So Daisy is the latest in the line of wiener dogs in our house. She's this dizzy, dappled dachshund that we rescued. She was very anxious and is, for some reason, around me. She's happy around you. If you come in, she'll wag her tail and greet mm-hmm. you. She might even pee on the floor. But when I come in, she gets a little upset. But she's better about it than she used to be. So that's good news for everybody at my house. Frank, you're on WGN. What was your question or comment? Hi, Frank.
Morning, John. When these baseball teams, or even any major league team, football, baseball, whenever they accelerate to the postseasons, these players are compensated for doing well to get the organization to the postseason. The Houston Astros went all the way to the World Series because they cheated, and who knows just for how long they were cheated or cheating. And for that reason, they were compensated for cheating. Those bonuses that they received from the organization
yeah.
and their salaries that were increased should be revoked because they got there because they cheated.
Let's let Dave comment on that.
Well, the player's share of the postseason for the winning team was $438,000.
Okay, that's a lot. Each player?
Yeah, per player. Well, again, what happens is the teams vote at the end of the year.
Oh,
they
that's
get this
right.
this pool, and then they...
Do they include the water boy or the equipment manager?
Well, they'll award partial shares to people who are close to the team, and they'll also, in a lot of cases, award partial shares, say, to a player who was with them for part of the season, perhaps was left off of the postseason roster.
Right,
you know,
sure.
But they'll
they
still
should.
Give them a partial share.
And sometimes they do give the bat boy a chunk of change.
Yo,
it's
yeah.
terrific. Okay, but $438,000.
How do you go back and collect that, though? Do you have these guys all... No, I'm serious.
I think they could
do
write,
write a check.
There's a thing called clawback. We do it in the financial sector. Yeah. If you cheat people because of a Ponzi scheme and then you bought a house, we yeah. take your house, sell it. We don't get much for it. And then the proceeds go back to the people.
I mean, I'm not suggesting they couldn't afford to pay back the money. I'm just wondering if... Yeah. If it becomes a bigger production to get the money, can they Venmo it?
Thanks for the call. Thanks for the question. By the way, Producer Aleph, did you have any luck? How many hamburgers has McDonald's sold, please?
Over 99 billion, John.
Over 99 billion. Yeah, see, I think they stopped when they got to 100 billion. They just said, okay, you get the idea.
Yeah, but they're 99 billion. So they're not at 100 billion.
Well, over 99 billion, she said.
Oh, is that what? Oh,
Producer Aleph, how many hamburgers has McDonald's sold, please? I'm not sure if we heard you correctly on that.
Over 99 billion, John.
There it is.
Oh, yeah. Over. I missed the over because I had something buzzed.
Dr. George Chiamp's on a phone line. He's the emergency medicine doctor at the Northwestern Medicine Hospital near you. Let's see. There he is on line 7. Doctor, it's John Williams. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Good morning, John. How are you doing?
Good. Did I get your last name right? Pronounce that for us, sir.
Chiamp.
Chiamp. Pardon me. And you're an emergency medicine doctor at Northwestern, correct?
I am. Yes, sir.
Are you seeing people with the flu then, Doc?
Without question. I think the last 30 days or so has absolutely seen an increase. We're seeing probably triple the numbers that we saw in October and November.
To what do you attribute that? Why triple the number?
I think as the temperatures are, getting colder, more people are obviously indoors and probably spreading those viruses a little bit more than when it was you know, better temperatures.
There's also, I understand, the shot that people were getting this year has not been as effective as in previous years. Is that right?
Well, I think, you know, the strains vary year to year. You know, that's how they determine what the flu shot is essentially made up of. You know, I think that is one contributor. I think, you know, additionally, you know, this time of year, we just see, you know, increased numbers of individuals who are sick. And, you know, whether it be the young, very young, the older, or those who have associated medical conditions.
I'm just looking at some of the statistics here. I was reading a story in the Chicago Tribune this morning. It says more than 900 lab tests in Chicago alone for the flu have come back positive since September. That's triple what we've seen in the past, actually more than that, says the Tribune. And nationally, 32 children have died. 21 of those were associated with influenza B. One last sentence from this story, Doctor. It says, across the country, levels of patients visiting doctors with flu-like illnesses remain high, and so far there have been about 4,800 flu deaths, according to the CDC. I had no idea that flu was taking that many people each year, you know?
Yeah, I think that, you know, as far as the numbers are concerned, obviously the awareness of this, you know, both in local and national news drives individuals to get tested. You know, sometimes people deal with these symptoms at home. But yes, I mean, the flu is, you know, absolutely something that no one should take for granted. If they develop symptoms, one, they should reach out to their pediatrician or their primary care doc. And if they're struggling, if they have high fevers, if they can't tolerate any foods, they need to be seen immediately.
Well, you know if you've got the flu, right? I mean, because the cold is one thing, but the flu is a fever and body aches, right?
That's exactly right. I think when you have harsh body aches, a fever, fevers that are about 103, 104, high fevers, you know, with some respiratory symptoms, runny nose, cough, sore throat, that combination really is more indicative of the flu versus just your common cold.
Doctor, I've heard people say that it's not that important to fight the fever. That is, that's a symptom, and what's bothering you is still bothering you. You still have the flu. What's your advice to people when somebody's running a 103, 104 fever?
Yeah, you still have to treat the fever. I mean, someone who has a fever of 103, 104 is not feeling great, and you want to control the fevers, because if you're not, then your likelihood of taking in fluids, being able to sustain yourself with that nutritional component, to be able to fight the illness is going to go down. So it's a combination of getting fluids in, controlling the fevers, and controlling your symptoms. And lastly, you know, the flu can then turn into a pneumonia, some other comorbidities that we really get worried about that ultimately are leading to the deaths that you described earlier.
If I didn't get a flu shot, should I still go out and get one?
Yes, absolutely. If you haven't gotten the flu shot, call your primary care doc, get the flu shot. Overall, it helps not only yourself, and it helps everyone else.
Are kids more vulnerable to this?
Yes, they're very young, under 2 years old. If they have associated diabetes or asthma or other underlying illnesses, those are the most vulnerable.
How do I get it? I mean, is everybody equally exposed to the flu, but the weakest among us are more likely to experience the flu?
Well, it's passed through the air. Whether you're coughing, you're sneezing, it could be on your laptop, on tables. So I think it's upon all of us to have a little bit of responsibility when you go into work, when you're at home, to use hand sanitizers, wash your hands. In the wintertime, you know what? Maybe you're not shaking hands and not spreading those germs that obviously are creating some of these issues.
I shook somebody's hand the other day, and I instantly thought, oh, maybe I shouldn't be doing that this year, or at least not right now. What is that, being hyper-cautious? Is that not necessary to worry about?
No, I like that thought. I think that's something, especially now these winter months, I think that's being protective, and it's something that probably you're seeing a little bit more amongst individuals.
Is this true? I might be able to pass the flu on before I even realize I have it.
That is true. You can have it before you develop symptoms, which may come up, you know, 24, 48 hours later.
And then how much longer after I get the flu can I circulate in public again? How long am I contagious?
Well, really, you want to be asymptomatic, meaning you're not having fevers, you're not having any of the symptoms for at least 48 to 72 hours before you go back to work and back in the public.
Boy, that's aggressive to me. I mean, I think a lot of people, if they feel fine today and 36 hours, you know, I got yesterday afternoon, so I'll skip that day and maybe today, but then I'm back at work. You think we should add another day on there, huh?
I do. I think that, you know, depending on the duration that you were sick, you still may need, you know, to get some nutrition, some hydration in you to really feel, you know, at least 90% to get back to work.
Dan has a question we've asked, but I think it's good to ask again just because I'm not sure I am completely up to speed on the answer. Go ahead, Dan. You're on the air.
Yeah, quick question. How effective is the flu shot this year compared to last? I know last year it was between 20 and 30% effective. Do you have any stats for this year?
I don't have the exact stats, but you know, even if it is 30% or 40%, if it wasn't utilized, I think we would be seeing significantly higher numbers.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Dan. I mean, I guess that's a good point. If it was 1%, it still might be better. You might be the 1%, but and it's obviously much higher than that. But is this true, too, Doctor? The challenge is that the virus, when they come up with the shot for this year, they did it over a year ago, right? It takes that long to get it into production.
Yeah, they basically look at the proteins of the virus that they've been dealing with, and that is what they base on to put together the flu shots for this year. It's obviously difficult to predict what's anticipated for 2021, for example. So that is essentially the platform that they utilize to be able to create the flu shot. The reality is we, you know, as a public, we also know what we should be looking for. And so I think being preventative, making sure that you're not spreading the virus, and then when you do become symptomatic, there's things that you can do. Get seen quick. I think for your listeners, if you feel like you are getting the flu, getting in to be seen and getting an antiviral, something like Tamiflu, where you really should start it within the first 2 days of your symptoms, max 3 days, can really reduce the amount of time that you're sick, can potentially reduce you getting sicker or developing a pneumonia. So I think it's really important for your listeners, if they do feel like they're getting the flu, get in as fast as possible because there are things that we can do to help them.
Dr. George Champas is an emergency medicine physician at Northwestern. Nice to talk to you this morning, Doctor. We really appreciate your help.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
You do too, sir. And now it's 10:08. Hey, by the way, after 10:30, we're going to talk a little bit about red light cameras. Why? Well, because the red light camera system in Illinois and Chicago has been mired in controversy and, for that matter, scandal. And there's questions about were there kickbacks between some of the people that were putting the red cameras in and the red camera company. It's kind of a complicated web. It's fascinating, but it's also disheartening. Every time you give the state of Illinois or the city of Chicago the opportunity to do something, it seems like they either screw it up or it's corrupt. So now we're going to have them oversee marijuana, or we're going to have them oversee gambling. And I'm a little skeptical. That's one point. But another point is maybe we should not be having the red light cameras anyway. There's some intersections where they're pretty safe, but they've got a red light camera, and they make millions and millions and millions of dollars for those little towns. And if in the process they actually increase accidents in some of those intersections, then forget the scandal. Maybe we ought to just turn the dang things off. Okay, so we're going to talk about that after 10:30. And the reporting on it has been very interesting. And I think some of these numbers are going to surprise you. My understanding is that red light cameras don't make intersections safer. There's more rear-end collisions, and I think the reason that Oak Brook Terrace and some other towns have them is because they want the cash. Chicago's no different. Your town may be no different either. Okay, what is your thought about that? We're going to talk about that at 10:33. Baseball is eating its own, so we have this controversy about the Astros, and now everybody is turning on everybody. Have you heard the Jack McDowell White Sox scandal, Steve Bertrand?
No, how far back are we going to go here?
Well, as long as there was electricity, maybe. This is in the late 1980s. Jack McDowell is a pitcher for the Chicago White Sox.
Jack McDowell.
He was on a radio station in Charlotte, WFNZ, this morning, and here's part of his conversation with them.
We had a system in Old Comiskey Park in the late 80s. Gatorade sign out in right center had a light. There was a toggle switch in the manager's office and a camera zoomed in on the catcher. Okay? I'm going to whistle blow this now because I'm getting tired of this crap. There was that. Tony La Russa is the one who put it in. He was also the head, the first team of all the team of people doing steroids, yet he's still in the game making $500,000, you know? No one's going to go after that. It's just the stuff's getting old where they target certain guys and let other people off the hook and, you know, like the media doesn't know that this all happened, what's going on. Everybody knows. Everybody who's been around the game knows all this stuff. Why all of a sudden it became a big thing, I have no idea.
Well, I didn't know. Maybe the Jack McDowells and the sports guys know, but America did not know. And if that's true, wow.
I'm trying to remember the Gatorade sign at Old Comiskey.
So they had a Gatorade sign in Old Comiskey.
I'm sure there was.
And,
yeah.
And if the camera said it's going to be a fastball, then they toggle the switch, and the light goes on or off, and you look out into the outfield, you see if the light's on or off, and that tells you what the pitch is going to be.
Tells you what the pitch is going to be.
Rather than vibrating your chest or banging a lid, just look off in the distance, and we'll tell you, fastball!
Seems primitive by today's standards.
Well, I don't know. A garbage can lid?
Maybe not.
The Grouch being involved?
You know, this is the other thing. I know that pitchers take a long time on the mound. I'm not discounting that at all. I think that's fascinating. I think that's sad. I don't know how true it is. I reached out to Ron Kittle, who played on that team, and I haven't heard back from Ron. Ron, give me a call. Ron will talk about anything usually. If he doesn't call in, that'll be suspicious.
Okay. That's a leap.
That's like if you drown your witch.
Exactly. Okay, but here's the thing. If you're up to bat, even if a pitcher takes 30 seconds in between pitches, the signal isn't dropped right away. The pitcher gets it. Now, what are you doing if you're a hitter? You're looking off into the distance instead of looking at the pitcher to get the sign, and then you say, okay, what is that? Is it a red light or a green light? It's a green. Okay, green is fastball. Okay, maybe you can make that adjustment that quickly, but it seems to me like all of these schemes would be maybe a little distracting to the hitter, too, trying to figure out what's going on instead of focusing on just the pitch as it's coming in.
Okay, let me ask you this, you guys. Is it different if a base runner on second is signaling to the batter?
100% different.
Yeah, I think so, too. I think that's okay.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
But it's not, is it? I think it's not legal.
Oh. There's a reason that you give signs in the first place, and so the other guy doesn't know what you're going to do. And if you can figure out what he's going to do just by being sort of on your toes and being alert, I mean, I don't.
Baseball is okay with that.
But yeah, I mean,
this is why the catcher.
I thought they weren't.
The catcher has an indicator. I mean, if that wasn't supposed to happen, I would hold up a one, and that would be a fastball, and I would hold up a two, and that would be a curveball. But they have an indicator. So when they drop a signal, they may say one, they may say two, they'll do some hand motions, and one of those is the indicator. And then the next signal will be the one that will be the pitch. But it's a sort of mishmash of signals. They do this at third base as well. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of, Dave.
Yeah, that's what kept me out of Pony League. I could never pick up on that whole system.
Yeah.
All right, so here's Jack McDowell again. Aleph, go.
We had a system in Old Comiskey Park in the late 80s. Gatorade sign out in right center had a light. There was a toggle switch in the manager's office and a camera zoomed in on the catcher. Okay? I'm going to whistle blow this now because I'm getting tired of this crap.
Okay, so that's as much as he described the system, but that's what he says they did. I don't know what we do about that. We don't have to vacate their World Series championship in 1989. I know that.
Well, this was, 87, I think, is when he broke in.
Yeah, I'm looking at
his wiki. And La Russa was gone. La Russa left in 86, went to Oakland.
So then he's saying it was going on for years.
Here's his wiki. McDowell was drafted, you know this better than I do, Dave, by the White Sox in the first round with the fifth pick of the 87 amateur draft. After only six games in the minor leagues, he was called up that year, September of 87.
How about that?
Pitched seven shutout innings against the Twins that day. Picked up a win in four starts. He threw a 1.93 ERA. The next year, he wasn't so great, but he, of course, became a very serviceable, dependable pitcher over many years.
Maybe this explains why the Cubs fought so hard to get an electronic scoreboard.
See, we can do that. We can do that. I'm all for that. I'm all for the fun that we're having with this. But the more comprehensive this scandal gets, then the more you just go, oh, what a shame. What a shame. That's our pastime. That's our game. It's 10:15. Lou Manfredini's on the phone line. Not for this reason, but I'll watch, you watch. Lou will have something to say about this. Hey, Mr. Fix-It, how are you?
I have an opinion.
It's our Lou Manfredini.
No electronic cheating. If you're a pitcher and you get a guy on second base or third base, you know they're trying to get your calls, and so you're going to change the way you operate. That's why the pitcher or the catcher will go out to the mound and say, look, you're going to throw a blah, blah, blah. The guy's on third base. He knows my sign. Yeah. But if you're doing it electronically where no one knows what's going on, that is just dirty pool.
Yeah. Yeah,
not interested.
Yeah, I'm with you, Lou Manfredini. You know what they should do? A guy like Lou, they should give him some sort of award. They should sort of honor him somewhere in Chicago.
Oh,
wait
God.
A minute.
Is it? No.
It says here, the 11th annual National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame is having their Night at the Fights amateur boxing tournament and winning the 2020 Gary Hall Friendship Award will be WGN Radio's Lou Manfredini.
Hey, congratulations.
How about that, Lou? Good for you.
That's very nice. Thank you very much. I'm very excited.
A lot of politicians use that event as a stepping off point. Well, are you going to run?
Well, I will with my second wife.
Yeah,
the problem is I'm still in love with my first wife, and she wants nothing to do with it.
Mary Beth has heard too many times that Lou could be a good alderman. He could be a mayor. He could do a lot of things. A lot of people know him. He has honesty, integrity, intelligence, and credibility have never been questioned. He's Mr. Fix-It.
Mayor Lightfoot, here's what you should do.
Listen, I keep trying to get a call to her about spray paint sales in Chicago. She just won't pick up the call.
Boy, this is a bugaboo. If you ever want to get Lou going, just say, hey, Lou, where can I get some good spray paint in the city?
Yeah, not in Chicago.
Yeah, and that's because people tag buildings and sides of things, Lou.
Since they outlawed spray paint sales in 1992, graffiti in the city of Chicago has not gone down.
Yeah. Meantime, I got to drive out to LaGrange to buy a couple of cans.
No tax revenue when you're buying in the suburbs.
So Thursday, February 27th, Thursday, February 27th, they're having, I think it's, there are eight fights or half a dozen fights, something like that.
Correct, right.
I've never seen a boxing match in my life, but Bill Comforti said that I'm in for two, so Brenda and I are going to be there. And,
oh, that's so nice.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And it's going to be a fun night. There's food, there's beverage, there's boxing. And are you going to put on the shorts and throw a couple punches? What do you do, Lou?
I'm not going to box whatsoever. I am going to graciously accept the award. The Italian Sports Hall of Fame organization is one that's been around for a very long time. They do terrific philanthropic work. Our mutual friend Bill Conforti has been involved in youth boxing for so many years, and.
Yeah.
In particular, the Hamlin Park Boxing Association that has really sort of redirected a bunch of kids in the right, in the right direction to a sport and training. You know, there's a lot of discipline that goes into boxing, I know you have, and I have attended several events, and always have been impressed by these young people and the impact that it all has. So I'm truly honored to be. Receiving this award. It's very nice.
And that's why you should go to this event, not just because it'll be fun to see Lou, and what do you know, boxing is, what do they call it? What is it, the sport? It's the there's an expression they use to describe boxing, the sport of champions or something like that.
Watch out for your nose.
No. But here's the reason that we should all go, because the proceeds go to this youth organization, and it really does help kids. It gives them something to do. It gives them confidence. It's a physical thing that not everybody can play basketball or football or baseball. Boxing is a skill and a sport kids learn, and they get so much from it. I never understood boxing, but I know it's a thing for some people, and let's support this organization. Making appearances will be John Seda, the actor, Ray Boom Boom Mancini, the former lightweight champion, will be there. And Larry the Easton Assassin Holmes, Larry Holmes, the former heavyweight champion of the world, is going to be there too.
Yeah, it's impressive. Impressive.
Yeah. All right, so Lou Manfredini, WGN Radio, 2020 Gary Hall Friendship Award for the National Italian-American Sports Hall of Fame. This is going to be February 27th, Thursday night. The doors open at 6. The first round is at 7 o'clock. Here's how you get tickets. Call this number, 312-226-5566. Call 312-226-5566 or just Google Night at the Fights in Chicago, February 27th. And we'll see you there, Lou. It's an honor. You deserve it. I think they've selected wisely. And let's raise some money for those good folks, okay?
You're a good man. Thank you very much.
Congratulations. Talk to you later, Lou.
Bye-bye.
Saturday mornings on WGN Radio. Bill Comforti and the gang, they give a lot of time, money, and effort to that cause. And it just helps kids you and I don't know achieve. 6 o'clock, the doors open. First bout is at 7 o'clock. Bill, what am I thinking of? What is boxing called?
The Sweet Science.
I knew it was something like that. The Sweet Science. Is that it? That sounds familiar, Bill.
That's it, buddy.
You know boxing, do you?
Well, I used to know boxing. I was at the first Leonard Duran fight in Montreal back in the day. And I used to follow because that was in the day when they had all the great welterweights and middleweights. That was wonderful era for boxing. Now, I couldn't tell you who's doing what and who's doing where. Don't even know who the champion of the world is.
I don't either. Well, isn't that interesting? Because you certainly, when Muhammad Ali was the champion of the world, you knew who it was. When Joe Frazier and when Mike Tyson, we knew those names. Those were household names. I don't know what's happened to boxing, but those names, whoever those equivalents are today, we don't know them, do we?
No, we don't have those giant promoters like Don King who like to rob those guys so well.
Yeah, I know. The whole thing stunk to high. In fact, how much Mike Tyson, who I think eventually went bankrupt, and this would not make him extraordinary. There's plenty of millionaire athletes who've lost all of their money. Something like 1 in 5 NBA players declare bankruptcy. Think about that. But I forget how much money Mike Tyson made, but he went bankrupt, and it was... Well, this is another question for producer Elif, but it was hundreds of millions of dollars, wasn't it?
Easy.
No. I appreciate you listening.
Those guys, you know how much those purses were. Plus, you have all the revenue from all the commercials and the endorsements and everything else, and these guys just took it all.
And they didn't know how to handle it. I appreciate the call. Yeah. Thanks for listening, Bill. You have a good day.
Sure thing.
Yeah, take care. Vic, what am I thinking of? You're on WGN. Hi, Vic.
Yeah, I've always known it as the sport of kings.
I've heard of that, too. I mean, these are ringing bells. I didn't think of them at the time, but that sounds true as well. Yeah. Remember now, I want Vic, for calling in, I don't have free tickets, but I'm going to encourage you to buy tickets tonight at the Fights, the amateur boxing tournament in Chicago, Thursday, February 27th. Call 312-226-5566, okay?
I will take that into consideration with my secretary treasurer sitting next to me in the car.
Yes, I have a chief financial officer as well. And you run it by her, okay?
I will. Thanks, Jay.
That's what I call Brenda sometimes. So my CFO, I'll talk to my CFO about that. We continue to talk about baseball today, and I thought yesterday, well, at least it didn't affect the Cubs or the White Sox, but Jack McDowell on a radio station in Charlotte, the former White Sox pitcher this morning, said this.
We had a system in Old Comiskey Park in the late 80s. Gatorade sign out in right center had a light. There was a toggle switch in the manager's office and a camera zoomed in on the catcher, okay? I'm going to whistle blow this now because I'm getting tired of this crap.
Yeah, so he's unhappy about... I don't know why he feels like he's got to speak up now, but since the Astros are getting busted, for some reason he thinks that maybe it's unfair that they're the only ones being called out for this. Maybe the Red Sox, now maybe the White Sox, now maybe... I wonder how many teams will... have been found to have some sort of electronic system to help the batters other than just another player on the field. By the way, we were just speaking of sports with Lou Manfredini, too. He's getting this award Somebody said, John, the sport of kings is horse racing. Yeah, I'll bet that's right. I knew I'd heard of that before, but it's not boxing.
I did do a Google, and boxing the sport of, and kings came up. So
I'm glad we're able to clear that up. By the way, producer Olive, how much money did Mike Tyson make in his career, please?
$685 million, John.
$685 million.
And he still had to do The Bachelor. Was it The Bachelor, or what was it called?
Apprentice?
No. What was the movie in Vegas? Bachelor Party, or...
Oh, that's right. He was in that.
With the tiger?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he was in that.
And he wasn't
really
terrible
good acting.
In that. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
I don't remember. I guess I don't remember. Mary, he wasn't
the
a good
hangover.
Actor in that?
The
yeah.
Hangover?
The Hangover, yeah. Yeah.
Is that the one where there was a tiger,
yes,
too?
Yes, his tiger, and... Oh, boy. It's pretty hilarious, though.
I caught a cab yesterday, or was it 2 days ago? I was meeting somebody for lunch right after the show, grabbed a cab. And on my way back, I caught another cab. I sit in the second cab, and there's disco lights going off all around. And the cab driver didn't say anything, and I thought, oh, this is just kind of a nice touch. Then I look down, and he's got a karaoke machine on the console between the front seat and the passenger seat. And he looks up at me in the rearview mirror, and he says, are you okay with the disco lights? This is 2 p.m. I said, I don't mind the disco lights. It's kind of nice. It was a clean cab. Very nice. He says, do you want to start singing? I said, no, I don't. He said, well, I'm the cab pool karaoke cabbie of Chicago. I thought it was going to be on a game show. But he has a cab. You can specifically call for him. And then he'll come, say, on a Friday or Saturday night. And you and the girls are partying. And instead of karaokeing at a bar, you karaoke in the cab. And he makes money doing this. He gave me his card, but it's the Cab Pool Karaoke Chicago. You can Google him and call. You will not find me in that vehicle. By the way, another shout out to the folks at Marie's, the pizza joint next to the liquor store on Lawrence in the north side of the city, not too far from the Kennedy. We go there once in a while. There we were again last night, and it was a Thursday night, of course. I forgot, but on Thursday nights at Marie's, they do jazz. And in that little pizza place there, in the middle, they had an excellent keyboard player and an amazing vocalist. Her name is Angel Spicha. I believe that was her last name. First name is Angel. A lovely young lady. She sings sometimes at the Green Mill, sometimes at Winters. She does a lot of the clubs in town. But there she was at this pizza place off of Lawrence last night. And she is terrific. What a nice... And by the way, she's there the second Thursday, I think it is, of every month. The keyboard player is there with his group the third Thursday. And every Thursday, they have music. So I heard two of the four Thursdays in a given month last night. And I'm recommending it. It was nice to see the gang over there, and thanks for the great service. We paid full freight. This is not a commercial for them, but when I have a nice experience and I think you might enjoy it, I'm happy to share that. And so Marie's gets another nod from yours truly. The music was really good. I talked about this earlier, but not to any great effect. I want to get into it a little bit now. There's a story in the Tribune today. Oak Brook Terrace Mayor Tony Ragucci recently paid $30,000 from his campaign fund to a lawyer that's representing him amid an ongoing federal corruption probe. Safe Speed LLC is the controversial company that operates lucrative red light cameras at intersections in dozens of Chicago area suburbs. So he's implicated in this story. He needs to get some legal representation. He takes $30,000 from his campaign fund, and he hires an attorney named Thomas Crooks. Side note, if you're an attorney representing people, I'm not sure Crooks is the best last name to have. Or maybe it's the perfect last name to have. But what about Thomas, super honest guy? Anyway, his name is Thomas Crooks. The investigation of Safe Speed first came to public light in September when the FBI and IRS agents raided the offices of then State Senator Marty Sandoval, Lyons Mayor Christopher Getty, and Jeffrey Tobolsky, The mayor of nearby McCook, who doubles as a Cook County commissioner. Safe Speed and its owners and officers have been among Ragucci's heaviest political donors over the years, election records show. These are the guys that decide, in some of these instances, where the red light cameras are going to go, and is a town going to buy a red light camera? They're going to use that service. And when you find out that the people that operate those services are donating thousands of dollars to those people's campaign coffers, it's a little cozy, isn't it? The Tribune reminds us, quote, no one involved in the Safe Speed investigation has been charged with any wrongdoing. Ragucci's relationship, though, with Safe Speed has long been controversial. A 2017 Tribune investigation documented how, as chairman of the powerful Senate Transportation Committee, Sandoval intervened on Safe Speed's behalf to push the transportation officials to change their stance and allow the company's cameras to be installed at the relatively safe intersection of Illinois 83 and 22nd Street in Oak Brook Terrace. Have you been by there? 22nd Street, isn't that Cermak and Illinois 83, Oak Brook Terrace? Pretty safe. They didn't need a red light camera there, maybe. But this guy said, no, let's go ahead and make sure we get one there. And then the company that installs it gives him a bunch of money for his campaign. The push came to light even though IDOT's policies require the cameras target dangerous corners to improve safety. And then there's the whole business about whether or not these cameras make it safe at all anyway. I'm reading from IllinoisPolicy.org. Red light camera ban in Illinois pushed by more state lawmakers. They've got a bunch of reporting on this. And one of the people behind it is Austin Berg, who joins us on the Mincing Rascals podcast frequently, but is the... Now, how am I supposed to introduce you, Austin? Is it Your Excellency? Is that what you said?
I thought you were going to say His Excellency.
Pardon me. His Excellency Austin Berg, the Vice President of Marketing.
Is this the big government segment of the show?
At the Illinois Policy Institute on Red Light Cameras. Hi, Austin. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, guys. No problem.
You all have reported a lot on this. And just start with that. Is there evidence to prove that the red light cameras at intersections make them safer or less safe? What's the ruling on that?
The evidence is mixed to negative. One of the best studies was done in Houston, and it found that while you did reduce by a little bit T-bone crashes, which are usually really dangerous at intersections, it actually increased rear-end crashes. And when you took kind of all of the injuries and the severity of those injuries into account, there's almost no effect whatsoever. Here's where we do know that there is an effect, and that is people's trust in government. They feel completely ripped off by these cameras. They feel like they're unfair. And that's why the nationwide use, the communities using them, is down 35% since 2012. Since 2012 in Illinois, we've built more and more and more of these cameras across the suburbs.
You all reported on how much money they've generated, right?
Yeah, the red light cameras outside Chicago, the revenue they're generating has more than tripled since 2008. So we're actually seeing just as many cameras outside Chicago as inside it. And altogether, they've generated $1 billion from drivers.
Over 10 years, right?
Over 10 years, from 2008 to 2018. It's an enormous sum of money.
So in the city of Chicago and the suburbs, we have paid $1 billion, us individual driver citizens, because of these red light cameras?
That's exactly right, and that's gone to the pockets of companies like Safe Speed as well as local governments like Oak Brook Terrace.
I'm just living with that for a second, Austin. That strikes me as a staggering sum of money.
It's huge, and I think Illinois Comptroller Susana Mendoza said something really powerful a couple of weeks ago talking about this. She said the program was, quote, broken and morally corrupt. And I could not say it any better myself. It is broken and morally corrupt, not only because of the amount of money that's generated. There's certainly corruption there. But the way people feel victimized by these cameras, I mean, these are $100 a pop, mind you. These aren't, you know, massive tickets, but that's a big deal for a low-income family. And think about how many $100 tickets you have to write up
to get a billion.
It's mind-boggling. And Oak Brook Terrace is a great example. They have two cameras there. They've generated around $10 million from two cameras over the last 2 years. And as you mentioned, those cameras are only there because of the muscle from State Senator Marty Sandoval pressuring the Illinois Department of Transportation to put them there.
I thought there was legislation to outlaw red light cameras or make it more difficult for this to happen. What's the status of these laws?
They should be pushed in the spring session. I hope they are. The bill that people should really be calling their representatives about is House Bill 323. It's a bipartisan bill. It's supported by Dave McSweeney and Jonathan Carroll that would ban these cameras. I think it would be a great step. It's a step that many other states have taken, including Texas just last year signed a bill banning red light cameras across the state.
Ban them outright. I mean, literally, they'll come down or they won't have any more, really?
Ban them outright, and there's seven other states besides Texas that do that, and there's three more states, there's seven other states that prohibit using them to cite drivers, and another three states just ban them outright.
All our phone lines.
It's a common practice, and we should do it.
All our phone lines are ringing. Austin Berg is the Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute. Now, this wise young man is a regular on the Mincing Rascals podcast. Another episode dropped last night in which Austin rolled his eyes at something I said. His jaw just kind of dropped at something that he couldn't believe I would actually say in the podcast. You remember that part of the podcast, don't you, Austin?
It could be
it kind of happens every week. I can't remember specifically.
It could be so many things, Austin.
I'm going to let you guys enjoy that. Okay, so 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's start with Debbie. You're on WGN. Debbie, you're on the air.
Hi, John. I wanted to tell you about my son. My son's Gordon. At the age of 30, he's a father of two. The intersection of Milwaukee and Devon by Superdog. Used to be a Dominick's on the corner. There's also used to be a Kentucky Fried Chicken years ago, but it's a very, very dangerous intersection. I used to work for Dominick's. My son actually got hit. I went out the very next day and gave you 18 seconds to get out of that intersection. And in rush hour traffic, it is just absolutely horrible. My son was a little old. For his birthday, I bought him brand new glasses. His glasses were...
Debbie just cut out. I'll tell you what she said on the screen, though. Her son was almost killed at an intersection with red light cameras. And I believe what she was telling Elif was exactly what Austin was talking about. And here's what happens. I don't need to tell you this, but you are worried about the red light camera giving you a ticket, so you hit the brakes, and then the person behind you hits you from behind. Now, that might not be a T-bone crash, and those are maybe the worst, but if somebody's going really fast behind you and they rear-end you, you've got whiplash, you've got terror, you can be pushed into the intersection. So that's, I think, the dominoes, right, Austin, that actually make these intersections less safe.
Yeah, absolutely. And after we put out that report, finding that $1 billion figure, I had so many people reach out to us describing either that incident or having a really slight rolling turn, turn right on red at a completely safe intersection. And obviously the argument for these cameras is, they broke the law, they got to pay the price. Well, a lot of people don't feel like they did break the law. And they felt like, if they slammed on the brakes, it would put them in danger. And that's why people think these things are so unfair.
Stay there, Austin. Let's pick up another phone line. John is on line 4. Elif, if I can go ahead and just pop John on line 4, right? Yep, there he is. Hi, John. You're on the air.
Hello, John.
Yeah, go ahead.
I just made a comment that most people won't make a red turn on a red light camera because they're afraid they're going to do it wrong and they're going to get a ticket.
Even though they have the right to.
If no one's coming, they just sit there. And I don't blow the horn at them because I understand it and I don't want them to get a ticket either.
Interesting point. Austin, your thought about that?
That's a very magnanimous reaction, not to honk at somebody, but yeah, doesn't everybody feel safer now that this is happening, that people aren't, moving with the flow of traffic?
Mike, you're on WGN Radio. Thanks for the call, John. Mike, you're on the air. What do you want to say?
Thanks. I think before we clean any of this up, we have to change the election laws. Only in Illinois can a public official take donations, and when they get caught doing something illegally, use those donations to pay for their defense. In Illinois, you can use a political fund for food, beverage, Blackhawk tickets, anything you want, as long as you talk politics with whoever you're spending it on. And the difference is, in private businesses, the IRS goes after you for that. I used to go to a mechanic on Ashland Avenue, Bacow Brothers, and on Saturday, they would buy lunch for any of the employees or any of the customers waiting, but the owners had to pay out of their own pocket because it was an IRS violation. Why does Illinois get to make up their own rules on this?
An interesting point. I'll let Austin comment on that. What's your thought about that, Austin?
I don't know if Illinois is actually that unique in that practice, but it is absolutely unseemly, if not outright corrupt, that you see Tony Ragucci spending $30,000 on legal representation from the company, who he interacted with to prompt the investigation in the first place. SafeSpeed was one of his biggest donors. Same goes for Martin Sandoval. And actually, we're seeing Omar Mani, who's an investor in SafeSpeed, the red light company at the center of all this. He's actually believed to be cooperating with federal authorities. So I think this story has legs, and we're going to keep seeing more about it in the coming months.
312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're talking to Austin Berg, Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute. They've written extensively about this. I recommend that you go there. I've still got lots more questions and comments from our listeners for you. Are red light cameras a good idea? Should we literally make them illegal? Have you got another minute for us, Austin?
Yeah, absolutely.
Stay right there. And just what a shame, if I may pontificate for a moment, that you do have technology. It can be used for good, but because we just screw it up, now we're going to completely wipe the things out. It seems to me like there would be instances where cameras can monitor behavior, issue tickets appropriately, or try and make things safer, but we just turned it into a cash cow for some municipalities and some politicians, and now we're going to strip the thing out completely. Your thoughts? Austin Berg's on the phone. Austin's a regular on our Mincing Rascals podcast. He's the Vice President of Marketing at the Illinois Policy Institute, and he prefers, if you meet him on the street, to be called Your Excellency. You still there, Austin? He does not
just
prefer.
Just biting my tongue.
Your reserve is shocking to me. Let's pick up a couple more phone lines. Joe wanted to jump in on the conversation. Hi, Joe. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. John, regular listener. I want to say that there used to be one of those red lights on 159th and Farrell Road in Lockport, and they finally took it down. The court was just filled. It was just a standing joke. And if you actually look, they have like a 5 to 7 second. You can put it on your computer and look, and they'll show you whether or not you've gone through the light. Here's the ridiculous part of it: the turning lane is going, and there's no way you could hit another car because the turning lane is making a turn right in front of you. So, yeah, as you said before, our state is illegal and immoral, and I can't believe that Madigan hasn't been indicted by the federal government yet.
That's another topic, and fair enough. I don't think we've heard Mike Madigan's name for the last time in the news in this news cycle. Austin, anything you want to say about that call?
Well, we talked a lot about Madigan on the podcast this week, so people should subscribe and listen to that conversation. He's in a whole other world of hot water beyond the red light camera scandal.
Because of this
leaked email surrounding his confidant's communication about a state worker who, quote, kept his mouth shut about the rape in Champaign. I think people, the reason Mendoza called this program broken and morally corrupt, and the reason she took action to actually stop her office from collecting these fines out of people's income tax returns is because of sentiments like this. People get so fired up about this issue, and you do see actions from people like Mendoza. You do see actions from some local municipalities, and even Chicago, who's taken down some cameras. But at the end of the day, you do need state action to address this problem, and I hope that that's what happens.
Donna, you're on WGN Radio. Hi.
Hi. I'm enjoying the conversation, but what I find missing from any conversation about red light cameras is the responsibility of the drivers to be aware as they're approaching a light that it's possibly going to turn red, and rather than speeding up, they should be covering their brake to be able to stop in a reasonable amount of time. And that really bugs me, that people are just speeding to, you know, make the light. It's allow a little bit more time to get to where you're going.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Donna. Absolutely true. Austin, your thought?
We've talked about the safety effects, though, and the problem is that these things don't make the intersections safer or even quite possibly make them more dangerous. And the as the other caller mentioned, the program has been gamed so much. We saw it even with the extent of yellow light times being changed in Chicago to the bare minimum to catch as many people as possible. That clearly wasn't about safety. And hey, a compromised position here is you can have a red light camera on the intersection. So in the case of a severe accident, for instance, you can find who you can't have hit and runs. You can find exactly, you know, who caused that accident and how, but just don't issue tickets automatically. That's where people get really angry, and that's where, you know, all of this corruption and wrongdoing comes into play.
I understand her point. I know you do, too. If we all were safer drivers and more alert and more law-abiding, we wouldn't need any of this. Accidents would never happen. But it's human nature. Those things do happen. And the question is this technology helping us or is it hurting us? And if at best it's a push, but one thing it is doing, as he's pointed out earlier, it's generating money for politicians and municipalities, $1 billion in the last 10 years, just in Chicago and the suburbs, not across the country, just around these parts. A minute and a half. Thanks for the phone call. Let's go next to Bill. You're on WGN. Bill, you're on the air. Hi.
Hi, I wanted to bring up three observations about intersections that bug me. I drive a lot. The first one is, I mean, in general, you come up to an intersection and there's so much in how you're going to react. If the light turns yellow, you then, as you're coming up to the intersection and there's people waiting to cross it, you got to check your rearview mirror and wonder if the car's behind you, if you hit your brakes, if they're paying attention. That's number one. Number two is, I think right turn on red should be consistent. Whatever it's going to be, you pull up to an intersection and there's a sign with a paragraph that says, no turn on red on school days when children are present.
Right, or, right.
I mean,
right.
There's just a bunch of different...
Yeah, a bunch of different instances where sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for joining us, Bill. We're out of time. Austin, if we want to read the stuff that you all have written about this, it's illinoispolicy.org. Am I right?
That's right. And if you'd like to take action to fix it, you can go to that website and click on the Take Action header, and you're going to want to contact your representative and tell them to vote for House Bill 323. House Bill 323, that's the bill that would take down these cameras.
Austin Berg over at the Illinois Policy Institute, a regular on our Mincing Rascals podcast, that dropped last night. Nice to hear your voice, my friend. We'll visit again. There goes Austin. 11:08, and some bad weather's coming, huh? A wintry mix. 1 to 5 inches of stuff starting at around 3 o'clock this afternoon. Warm enough tomorrow, a lot of it could melt off. That's the best-case scenario. Steve Grzanich reminded us earlier. Earlier on the show today, we played for you an audio clip of Jack McDowell, the former White Sox pitcher in the late 80s. He came up with the Sox. He was their first-round draft pick. He pitched for the White Sox, did well. Then not great, and then had a really nice run. He was on a radio station in, it wasn't Nashville this morning, in Charlotte. This is Jack McDowell talking about the scandal, starting with the Astros using electronic means to tip pitches to the batters. This is what McDowell said about the White Sox.
We had a system in Old Comiskey Park in the late 80s. Gatorade sign out in right center had a light. There was a toggle switch in the manager's office and a camera zoomed in on the catcher. Okay? I'm going to whistle blow this now because I'm getting tired of this crap. There was that.
Then he goes on to say things about Tony La Russa. He's not happy with La Russa still being in baseball, et cetera, et cetera. On that team was Ron Kittle. And Ron's going to join us in about a half an hour.
We'll talk
to Ron after the 11:30 news. Kittle is not one to mince his words. I'm not sure. Well, I told him about this. I'm sure by now he's heard about what McDowell is saying about that team. So Ron will join us in about 30 minutes.
Because remember, McDowell wasn't swinging the bat, right? So he's not accusing himself. He's accusing guys like Kittle who were swinging the bat.
Yeah. Well, that became kind of the existential question. So then who is cheating and who isn't cheating on a team that cheats? Is it just the guys at the bat? Is it the guy banging the garbage can? Is it everybody in the dugout that knows but doesn't say anything? Pitchers are completely off the hook in the American League. They don't bat. In the late 80s, they weren't playing National League teams, were they, and batting once in a while? Maybe they were.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Either way, you know, pitchers don't hit, so it's easy for them to say, well, it wasn't me. But maybe it was everybody. And is his version of events true, Ron? That's after 11:30. Hey, just before the break, we were talking with Austin Berg from the Illinois Policy Institute about the red light cameras that are making you crazy. And here's why they are in your world, because they generate money. $1 billion has been paid by people in the WGN radio listening area over the last 10 years. $1 billion. There's a movement afoot to say not only are those cameras a boondoggle, they're making a lot of money for municipalities, they might not be making the roads safer, the red light cameras. One of the people who's authored legislation about that is Jonathan Carroll from the 57th District. He's on the phone. Hey, Jonathan, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Hi.
Hey, John. How are you?
Pretty good. Tell me about your bill.
Well, I'm on about three of them, and so the bill basically wants to end the practice. So we're seeing that municipalities have been abusing these for a while, you know, and I know my policy on it earlier, and you know, we've seen not only are these things a cash grab for the municipalities that have them, but the other problem that we have with these things, too, is that I think they're not making the roads safer. So, It's a pure cash grab by these towns, and it's a practice that needs to stop. And especially starting with you, just to kind of give you my perspective on why this is an issue for me.
John, I just moved here from Texas. In Austin, all of the red light cameras were removed. The statement in the newspaper said those cameras were unconstitutional. Let's finish our conversation with state lawmaker Jonathan Carroll. His name's on three bills. He's one of the legislators that says we need to make these red light cameras illegal. Is that right, John? If you had your way, you'd pull them right out?
Yeah, and so I apologize about the other connection. Absolutely. I mean, again, these have been such a problem for a lot of drivers in Illinois. I don't think they make the road safer. I think they're just a pure cash grab. And some of the way these things are set up is they're such gotcha cameras that, again, they're not keeping the road safe. They're purely set up to make sure that they're taking money out of our pocket for things that just don't make the road safer. And they need to end, and they need to end now.
Is there a lot of support for this?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think most of my constituents and most of the lawmakers agree. Some of the municipalities don't, but you know, that's where we're at, is we're going to keep pushing the legislation forward. There's three bills, two sponsored by Republicans, one sponsored by Democrat. I'm on all three of them. If someone else introduces a bill, I'll be on that one too. And this is going to be a priority of ours this session. And it was really helpful that Susana Mendoza, the comptroller, came out saying she's going to end the practice of collecting for these municipalities.
Okay. Thanks for the phone call. And thanks for the work on that. Good luck to you guys. And let's stay in touch on that, Jonathan. I appreciate your time. So now let's move on at 11:17. Peter Greenberg, speaking of the travel business, is on the phone. Hey, Peter, it's John Williams. You're on WGN. Good morning.
And good morning to you, sir.
Hey, where are you today, Peter?
I'm on board an Amtrak train right now, heading between Los Angeles and San Diego. How about that?
I think the last three times I've talked to you or heard you, okay, you're on a train in California, you were in Poland or talking to the Polish ambassador, and last week you were in South or Central America. Does that sound right?
Close enough. I was in the Dominican Republic. You got it.
Your show is on WGN Radio, the Eye on Travel, Saturdays from 4 to 6. Peter, I was reading about the 737 MAX safety investigation, and it sounds like the FAA has approved the results of that investigation. They're saying that those planes are safe to fly on. Is that the read on that?
It is not the read on that. What the FAA is basically saying is that they fixed the software system. That was the problem that caused those two crashes, both in Indonesia and Ethiopia. But remember, we're way away before this plane flies, because they've got to get the pilots trained now in that system. And what Boeing was suggesting was that all the pilots had to do was do a quick little iPad refresher course on a tablet, and the pilot said, no way, we want simulator training. Here's the problem. There are not enough simulators with that system in it to go around. So it's going to take a while. That's one of the reasons why Southwest Airlines removed the 737 MAX from their schedules now through June. We might not see this plane fly before the end of summer.
So there are no 737s in operation anywhere in the world?
No 737 MAXs. That is correct.
Yeah, that's the one we're talking about. And have they all been grounded since the second of those crashes?
Oh, yeah. They've been grounded since March of last year, which means that by the time they fly again, it could be a year and a half. And let me put this in some financial perspective. 400 planes have been grounded. Those are the planes that had already been delivered to the airlines that were being operated at the time they were grounded. That's the equivalent of taking out 40,000 seats a day from the inventory. That's a huge revenue loss from the airlines. It's a huge revenue loss for the pilots who can't earn money because they're not flying them. And it's a huge revenue loss for Boeing. So this is going to have reverberations that will continue for many years.
So 400 big old completely finished airplanes are parked somewhere and they're not using them at all.
Well, it's more than that. It's not just the planes that are parked that Boeing finished making that they haven't delivered yet. It's the planes they already delivered that are parked. So we're talking about more than that.
And are those planes that unsafe? I want us all to be as prudent and cautious as possible, but what's your thought about this?
Here's the reality. These planes will fly again. They will be recertified. I will be on them, John. But the issue here is not whether or not they're going to be fixed. They will be fixed. The issue here is the optics. You know, the word 737 MAX has such a negative connotation now that in the most recent surveys, nearly 50% of veteran business travelers say they don't want to fly one. That tells you a lot about the damage done to the image of this aircraft. Now, again, I have complete confidence the plane will be fixed. What I don't have confidence in is the culture of the behavior of the FAA and the behavior of Boeing that allowed this problem to happen in the first place. And if that's not fixed, it's going to happen again.
What was the culture? What happened? How did we not know about this?
How does a regulatory agency take direction from the very company that's supposed to regulate? Boeing is not the client of the FAA. I was at a meeting once with one of the airlines, and the airline described the FAA as their partner. No, the health department is not the partner of the restaurant. The FAA has to take command here. They have to have proper oversight in the manufacturing of a plane, any plane, and proper oversight in the actual certification of the plane once it comes off the assembly line, and certification and maintenance supervision when they do future maintenance. All of that has been lacking for many, many years, not just with Boeing, but since the inception of the FAA. They were enacted by Congress back in 1935 and given a completely schizophrenic mandate, John. One, to enact and enforce safety regulation, that's okay. But the second one was to promote the business of aviation. You cannot do both. You cannot do both. And until they fix that definition and fix that culture, we have the makings of another problem somewhere down the line.
Boeing, though, doesn't benefit in any way from a plane being anything but 100% safe. They manufactured these things. There was this software glitch. You know, we all know a little bit about software problems, and when they go bad on my laptop or on a machine at work, it's not catastrophic. But I also know that software glitches can be fixed with some code and some implementation. I mean, I'm hopeful that, and I'm wondering if the fix is kind of that simple.
Well, it's not that simple because, you know, you can't move one chess piece on an airplane without moving the entire board. But they figured it out, and they can fix it, and they will fix it. The real problem is, you know, when this plane does fly again and it's certified and approved, you know, and I know instinctively, that if a passenger hears a pin drop on that plane,
yeah,
someone's going to have a panic attack for the first 6 or 8 weeks, and there'll be a lot of, you know, recalled flights or emergency landings that turn out to be absolutely nothing. Again, they're going to fix this plane. I will fly on this plane. But the operative mandate here is to fix the culture of the FAA and its relationship with the very companies they're supposed to regulate, or we're going to go no further in terms of progress.
Will they rebrand those planes, should they?
Well, you know, the artist formerly known as Prince, I hate to tell you, was Prince. So I don't know if that's going to help anybody. Everybody knows what this plane was and is. This plane, by the way, and its basic model, the 737, has been around over 50 years. So right now, Boeing is a victim of its own arrogance and its own feelings of invulnerability and its own feeling that they could dictate to the very agency that was regulating them. They've got to fix that. Rebranding this plane is going to accomplish absolutely nothing.
Peter Greenberg's on the phone. His Eye on Travel airs Saturdays on WGN Radio. 4 o'clock tomorrow, you'll hear him. By the way, before I let you go, Peter, our news click, our daily web poll question was about Chicago banning foam food containers and plastic utensils. It's garbage. It should be recycled. We don't do a good job of it. It's bad for the environment and all of the animals. So now you can't have plastic takeout stuff in Chicago. The story I was reading about it said, you know who the biggest culprit is? It's not restaurants, although they're culpable in this. It's the airlines. When you get off of that plane,
that's
the amount
right.
of garbage that comes off that they just throw away is shameful.
You know, they've got to change the regulations, because with technology and refrigeration systems that are out there now, so much of what is not used on an airplane can be very quickly refrigerated again and delivered to the people who need it the most. So many food banks have approached the airlines over the years to try to make that happen. Even the airline employees are trying to get involved in this. But you've got to change a few of the health restrictions to allow this to happen, and it should be done quickly.
If I don't use my headphones, do they just give those headphones to the next person? I suppose. I mean, I'm wondering how much of the stuff I don't use on the plane do they throw away or do they reuse?
If it's just plastic and those cheap headphones, they're thrown out. If it's the real expensive headphones they hand out in first class, there's a reason why they collect them before the plane lands. They use them again.
Yeah. Hey, safe travels to you. So you're on a train today, huh?
Planes, trains, and automobiles. It's my life.
Safe travels, and we'll listen for you tomorrow, Peter.
Thanks so much, John.
Peter Greenberg, heard Saturdays on WGN, his Eye on Travel show. Yeah, when you get off of the planes, I mean, as you're walking up the aisle, you look to your left and right, and it just looks like a football team came through. And you think, geez, what a bunch of garbage. I don't know if they can get the food off the plane and to the, you know, food shelter, the places that'll give the food to the people that need it. You know, the irony would be that they do that, and then the people that really need the food would go, yeah, this isn't so good. It's too salty. I don't know what would happen with that.
I
don't mind airline food that much, to be honest with you.
Well, not to be biased, but Turkish Airlines food is so good. Are you flying Turkish next this year?
Gee, Elif, are you Turkish by any chance?
I think so.
Yeah.
Their taffy's outstanding.
You mean Turkish Delight?
I have not booked. I don't know what airline I'm going to be on when we travel with Kelly Cruises. We'll be landing. Oh, that's right. We're flying to Turkey. We're going to Istanbul.
I hope you fly Turkish Airlines, because it's a smooth ride, and the food is delicious.
It's a smooth ride.
But I will say, there's a lot of...
Really? They don't have turbulence?
They don't do turbulence.
I mean, it's a quick ride, whatever.
Oh, so it's shorter, though, if I go from here to Istanbul from Chicago.
Direct.
It's a shorter route if you fly Turkish Airlines than if...
If you go direct.
Direct.
So how do they get there in a shorter distance or a quicker time?
I'm not saying that.
Oh, okay. It sounded like you said that it's a smoother, quicker ride.
It's quicker because it's overnight, which I think a lot of flights to in that direction are anyway. But but it's really, they have every movie and the food is great. But yeah, there's a lot of plastic. I was just thinking about that, and then I thought of how good the food is.
I think the airline attendants' outfits are just terrific, too. Very handsome people getting on and off that plane.
Mm-hmm.
But I digress. It's 11:28 now on WGN. Our Bright Side of Life segment is your chance to call in and tell us some good news in your world. I wonder if Ron Kittle will have anything to say about that. There's this baseball scandal, and I was thinking about talking to him earlier in the week when we wondered, gee, the Houston Astros used these crazy means to tip pitches to the batters. It was cheating. Maybe they shouldn't even have their World Series rings anymore. What do you think of that, Ron? But then his former teammate, Jack McDowell, said on a radio station this morning that the White Sox used to do something like that too. Ron, is that true? I want the whole Fox and Friends team. The whole Fox and Friends team to be there on the, bring out the sofa and everything and have them defend the president at the Senate trial. That'd just be kind of fun. I mean, it would be a good, comfortable thing for him, and they're pretty smart. They know their stuff. They're opinionated. They're informed.
You know, one of the issues right now is C-SPAN is trying to get Leader McConnell to allow them to control the cameras. Because even though it's on C-SPAN, they can't control who's on camera.
Oh, wow. So, I guess that would just be one way to tell the story. That'd be interesting.
Yeah, but I don't know because, right, because it's a Senate chamber. When there's the State of the Union, it's in the House. So the networks have their own control, I guess, but not in the Senate.
Okay. Well, we'll keep you posted. By the way, speaking of Mitch McConnell, I just saw a story this morning, Steve, and I don't remember who number one is, but there's a survey of the most popular and least popular senators in the United States Senate. And you think maybe Mitch McConnell would be, like some politicians, very popular and very unpopular, that he, in fact, might be at least the least popular senator of them all. But his score is second lowest. There's one other senator who has a lower rating from their constituents.
And you don't remember who it is?
I think it's Susan Collins.
Oh, from their constituents. Someone said she was under 50% now.
Yeah, she's going way down. And it's a district that the Democrats think they can win.
It's interesting, too, because she's a moderate.
Well, that may be her problem these days.
Well,
which
that's
is
the country's
shame.
Problem.
And I like her. I mean, I like because I think she's a fair voice. She's got a fair ear. But she's the least popular. And I know I'm not doing a good job. I don't have the story in front of me. Maybe it's her constituents. Maybe it's nationally. But I think it's her constituents.
And when I say it's the country's problem, I mean, on both parties now, we are moving to only electing. We're not electing moderates on either side.
I completely agree.
And it's not helping us.
That's the way I heard you. It's 11:35. Ron Kittle's on the phone. Hey, Ron, it's John Williams. Dave Ennett just strolled into our studio, too. Dave, say hi to Ron Kittle. Hi, Ron. Good morning.
Morning, Ron.
Hi, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, listen, Ron, I want to play for you a clip, first of all. This is Jack McDowell on a radio station this morning, and he was asked about the scandal where the Houston Astros were tipping pitches in the 2017 season and in the 2017 World Series.
We had a system in Old Comiskey Park in the late 80s. Gatorade sign out in right center had a light. There was a toggle switch in the manager's office and a camera zoomed in on the catcher. Okay? I'm going to whistle blow this now because I'm getting tired of this crap. There was that. Tony La Russa is the one who put it in. He was also the head, the first team of all the people doing steroids, yet he's still in the game making $500,000, you know? Mm. No one's going to go after that. It's just the stuff's getting old where they target certain guys and let other people off the hook and, you know, like the media doesn't know that this all happened, what's going on. Everybody knows. Everybody who's been around the game knows all this stuff. Why all of a sudden it became a big thing, I have no idea.
Ron Kittle, former White Sox player, also played for the White Sox in the 1980s and 90s, et cetera. What about that, Ron?
I tell you what, I played with Jack and I was on that team, but I don't know anything about a light. I might be the stupidest person in the world because they didn't tell me about it. Maybe they didn't want me to know. I don't know. But I think it's a little upsetting what's going on. You're a Major League Baseball player. You're playing on a professional team, and you have to win. And I am sure for the last 100 years of baseball, somebody always had an edge on somebody. Tipping pitches. I mean, if somebody clicked me and told me a pitch was coming by banging the thing, I would not pay attention to it. I wouldn't even know what the hell. I'm not that quick. I wasn't that good. But you want to win. Your team wants to win. And I think they're going to do anything they can to win. So it's a sad situation.
Well, my guess is that if there was a system like that in the White Sox organization, you are one of their valued hitters. You would know about that if that was taking place. I got to believe everybody on the Astros team knew what was up. It's hard for me to believe that a hitter of your magnitude would not know about a system if the White Sox had a system in place.
Well, I mean, there's certain. I never knew. Like, I never wanted to know what pitch was coming because I had in my head how they were going to pitch me. So I was already programmed of what was going on. I think that was important. I mean, I was with the Cleveland Indians in 88, and Joe Carter was on the team. And he used to sit there and look at things like Roger Clemens. Every time he pitched threw a fastball, his pitching glove was straight up and down. Every time he threw a breaking pitch, his glove was sideways. So, you know, you can pick up little things like that to get the edge on somebody else.
Ron, do you know about the Gatorade sign that Jack's talking about? Can you remember that sign?
No, I have no idea, to tell you the truth. Really, I don't know where I was, to tell you, but I was on the team with them.
And I'm sure people want to help somebody do well. You know, I don't think I had anything, because when I was there, I was having a pretty good year, and I wound up getting hurt. And, you know, I don't like to be told anything, to tell you the truth. Maybe that's just pure stubbornness. But
well, wouldn't you worry, Ron, also that maybe you're tipped off to a pitch, and it turns out that the pitcher shook off the catcher or just decided to throw something else?
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, if you got a pitcher on the mound as a Justin Verlander who throws hard, you're going to get 90% fastballs. You know, so you already know as a player, a batter, how you're going to be pitched. And that was the part of the game that you had to understand. I wasn't going up there looking for changeups off nobody.
Well, here's what just think about it. I mean, this is what I was wondering about, Ron, and you can answer this question maybe. So the catcher drops a signal. Somebody with a camera in center field sees it. They go, okay, that's a two. That means a curveball. Hit the curveball light. Then they hit the curveball light. Then you've got to look at the curveball light, see it, and go, oh, curveball. Now mentally prepare for a curveball. By the way, this is all happening in real time. So does it even give you enough time to prepare enough to use that information as a batter?
You know, I just saw a stat the other day. A pitcher throws a 90-mile-an-hour fastball. So as a hitter, you have it's at point. 0.004 or something like that. Yeah. Then the hitter has 0.015 to react to it. So there's not a whole lot of big window there for anybody to sit there to make those adjustments. But like I said, whoever's pitching and he has one pitch working for him that day, say it's his curveball, he's going to throw that more often or not. So you're going to be ready for a curveball.
Well, then so, what's McDowell doing? Then why is he telling a story like this?
Well, maybe players that he played with got traded and hit him real well. I mean, but I'm sure catchers have been given signals for, what, 100 years? You know.
Well, I know that, but there's no problem with that. But what do you think of, like, do you agree with us on this, Ron? I think most of us in this room right now feel this way. It's okay, right, Dave, for a runner on second to tell the batter with a hand signal what the pitch is if he's picked it up, right?
We're all absolutely
okay.
Now that's been going on for years,
and that's okay. But what about the electronic stuff where they're doing it from center field? What do you think of that?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that. but getting back to the guy on second base relaying the sign back into the hitter, in the old days when I played, the pitcher would recognize that, and you get drilled in the ribs on the next pitch or the next time you batted. Now the pitchers can't throw at hitters, so there's no inside pitches hardly ever anymore. Nobody's getting hit, so they're just taking full swings all the time. But I agree with you. Electronics cheating, I don't think it's too cool.
Okay, one last question for me, and then I don't know if the guys have any last questions. How endemic do you think it is in baseball? In the probably going to be a lot less of it this year, but how much of this sort of high-tech cheating do you think has been going on?
You know, it just, what are there, 30 teams? You just think two of them are doing it? It might be around. I'm not real sure. They don't tell me that kind of stuff. I feel bad, John. You know, it makes it kind of easy sometimes. But all that happened now is three people are going to have new managers. So there's three more jobs for somebody else.
Yeah.
Are you angry about it at all, Ron, about what this may have done to a game that's, you know, at a point where they're trying to attract younger fans and you want to have integrity in the game? Does it bother you?
You know, I'm so far removed from being a player anymore. I'm an ambassador for the White Sox.
Right.
But I sit in the stands and I watch an outfielder pull his phone out of the pocket, you know, and he's getting the text that says, hey, shade him to the right or whatever it is. I mean, it's an electronic game.
Do they do that?
Oh, absolutely they do that. And I don't think they're taking phone calls, but, you know, they have to relay that message quicker than somebody standing on top of the dugout yelling at you.
Waving at them. All right, I'm out of time. Let's talk again between now and the season starts, and then after the season starts. We're very excited about this team this year, Ron.
I am. I think they made a lot of great moves. I'm looking forward to it. Not an opening day in March when 28-degree weather, but,
yeah,
you know, but it'll be some warm days. It's going to be a great summer in Chicago.
We'll talk to you later.
Thanks.
Thanks, John. Thanks, guys.
Bye. Ron Kittle played for the Sox back then, says he doesn't remember a Gatorade signal. Doesn't want anything to do with that.
Well, he didn't remember the Gatorade sign, which I was trying to picture it, too, when there were a lot of signs... still are in the ballpark. I mean,
I don't think he caught my point, though, that while I know there's a difference in time that the pitch gets from pitcher to catcher, it's just a matter of seconds. The whole exchange takes place. Maybe it would help, but maybe not as much as we think. I don't know.
Well, I mean, see, that's the thing. No one's really talked about this. Even if you know what pitch is coming, does it help you? Yeah. Does it guarantee you're going to hit the ball out of the ballpark? Of course not. You still have to hit the ball.
Well, let's go back to McDowell then, because he was very specific in what he said.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, how does Ron not know? Ron's a gregarious guy. Everybody likes Ron. Ron talks. Ron listens. He's great company. He was a clutch hitter for the White Sox. He doesn't know about that? I don't have a dog in this hunt. I'm just trying to figure it out. It's 11:45. Our Bright Side of Life segment comes next. Call 312 or text 312-981-7200. Give me some good news in your world. We could use some, eh? This is the time for us to be bright. 312-981-7200. Call or text WGN right now. By the way, David and I were talking off the air. We're about to do our Bright Side. I just wanted to mention this, though, that it's possible that the year McDowell was talking about was not the year that Kittle was there. So while their careers overlapped, there was a period of time when one was on the team and the other is not. So maybe what McDowell is saying was true. Maybe that was happening. It's possible that when then the White Sox drafted Kittle, it was no longer in place. That's possible. I'm just trying to figure out why two guys on the same team that played together have completely different views on something that everybody is wondering about. It's 11:48. This is WGN Radio. We do something on Fridays called The Bright Side. You call in, tell us some good news. We play this happy little song.
Some things in life are bad.
You text.
They can really make you
or
mad.
Or call us now.
Other things just make you swear and curse.
I have some Bright Side of Life pins.
When you're chewing on life's gristle.
We'll hand some of those out.
Humble, give a whistle.
Get ready to whistle.
And this'll help things turn out for the best.
And sing here.
And always look on the bright side of life. Always.
Lauren Lapka, you going to help us out on this today?
Sure am.
Over in WGN Traffic, you'll hear Lauren throughout the afternoon. Thanks for giving us a hand. Let's pick up a couple of phone lines. We'll start with, lots of them here. But you can also get in, 312-981-7200. Well, I think that person hung up. Somebody said that their baby found their credit card. And I don't know what that is. But there's a story I wanted to hear. We'll start with, is it Jeff? You're on WGN. How are you?
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's your bright side, sir?
Monday, my wife and I and my two 30-something children are going to Costa Rica.
Oh, very nice. Very good timing, sir. Get out of Dodge while it's cold, right?
That's right. That's right.
Have a great time, Jeff. We'll go to George. You're on WGN. Give me some good news, George. Why are you smiling?
I'm smiling because our one and only granddaughter named Petty is turning two.
We go to Donna next. You're on WGN. Why are you smiling, Donna?
Well, tomorrow my husband and I will be celebrating our 51st wedding anniversary.
Nice.
So that's cool. Yep.
That is cool.
Always look on.
Thank you, Donna. Congrats.
Side of life.
Marianne, you're on WGN. Give me some good news, Marianne.
Hi. Tomorrow is my third year anniversary. I had a heart transplant, and every day is a bright side of life.
Listen to you. You sound great, too. 3 years, huh?
I am, yes.
You get around,
every
Marianne.
Day.
You take walks.
Oh,
you do,
yeah.
How about that? How about we live in amazing times, don't we? Well,
yes, medicine is amazing.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Lauren Lapka's reading our text line. What are you looking at, Lauren?
Speaking of the name Marianne, 815 says that it's been a while, but they've got a beautiful lady in their life. Her name is Marianne, and they're both walking on air. It just melts my heart.
God bless you. Eileen, you're on WGN. What's some good news in your world, Eileen? Hi.
Hi,
Hi, John. I just wanted to tell you my bright side is my son, Matt, just received his avalanche certification training out in Lake Tahoe, California, third year in a row as a first responder.
Wow. What a calling. Good for him. Thank you. Hey, Vicki, you're on WGN. What's some good news in your world, Vicki? You're on the air. Hi.
Hi. Instead of all of the mess that's going on, I still say we're one day closer to baseball season, and that's when our independent baseball players come back and live with us for the summer.
Wait a minute. Independent baseball players. You talking about the college kids?
No, these are kids that play in the independent league, American Association, the Gary South Shore Railcats.
Yeah, you know,
They used to be in the same league with Schaumburg and Joliet years ago, but now they're two different leagues.
And then you're one of those host families, huh?
We are. We have been since 2006.
My son used to do that when he was in college. He'd travel in the summer, live with a family in Canada or Virginia, and they'd put him up and they'd play town ball. It's just a wonderful thing. Vicki, have a great season. Let us know how the season goes throughout the year, okay?
Will do. Thank you.
Lauren, you got lots of text to read. What else are you looking at?
I sure do. I'll give you a serious one and a funny one.
Okay.
So we have 815 says their bright side is after four rounds of IVF, their wife and him are expecting their first child in August. So that's amazing. And then the funny one would be that 630 says they dropped their phone and it landed on the toilet seat, not in the toilet.
Joyce, you're on WGN Radio. Why are you smiling today, Joyce?
Hi, my family, of course, is my brightest side, but I'm happy today because I got to listen to you. I'm off, so I miss you later in the hours, in the afternoon.
Yeah, I'm on a little earlier now, but look at that, Joyce. We're getting along just swell. It's nice of you to call.
Thank you.
Have a good day. Lauren, read another one.
We have 708 says that their bright side meeting their birth brother for the first time next week, and he's 55, or she.
Wow.
And he is 58.
Wow. Wow. I wonder if that's one of those tests, you know?
Genealogy.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. On line 9 is Steven. Hey, Steve, you're on WGN Radio. Give us some good news, Steve. You're on the air.
Hey, John. Yes, my mom's 84th birthday, and yesterday she passed her driver's test again.
That's a good thing, right?
Yes, it's a wonderful thing.
Hey, Steve, hold the line. Let's give you and your mom our Bright Side of Life pin, courtesy of our friends at the Joint Relief Institute. Big League Pins make some amazing pins. And we've got some bright side pins to give you. So you and your mom get one, have her put it on her lapel if she's driving down the road. Lauren, read another one.
The perfect definition of a bright side, 630. My bright side is I got pulled over this morning and was told just to slow down.
Wow. Whew. I didn't know they still did that. That's nice. That is a bright side. Always look on the bright side of life. Hey, Mary, you're on WGN. Why are you smiling today, Mary?
If you're listening to me, thank you for taking me. Been to Mayo Clinic. I'm surviving stage 4 cancer. Treatment was yesterday, and I got a good reading. Two more to go, and hopefully I'll be through it. Forget
by your seat. Mary, our best to you. You betcha. We're wishing and rooting and praying for you. You hang in there, my friend. And I'm going to talk to Lori next. Hey, Lori, what's your bright side? You're on the air.
I headed to Madison to meet up with seven other ladies to do our annual weekend away. People coming from three different places, and we join up there every year, and we're staying in a hotel that has heated underground parking.
Have a great time, Lori. It seems like the ladies do that more than the men. The guys should do that. A guy's weekend, we'll all go to Madison, drink beers, watch games, scratch.
Knit, and, just crochet.
Lauren Lapka, read one more or two, maybe.
815 says that last week their son and them went to Lambeau, and now they're flying out to San Fran to go see the game. So while they're a Packers fan, that's pretty freaking cool.
Got one more for us?
Sure. Let's go with this one. 847 says that after many years as an assistant coach, their son was hired as a head coach. I'm not sure for what, but that's pretty awesome.
We do this on Fridays. You call in, tell us some good news in your world while you're smiling, and we'll smile with you. It's the bright side. Have a good weekend. Let's see how the business scene is doing. We talk to Xi next. So we just heard your voice a moment ago, Xi. What's coming up a little later on?
Well, we're going to unpack what's going on with Facebook. You know, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi blasted Facebook as a shameful company yesterday. So we're going to unpack what's going on there. Also, are you a fan of MMA, mixed martial arts, at all, John?
Nope.
You're not. Are you into sports? I've been listening to you. I don't know that you...
I'm not, you know, not like the sports guys are. Like, I've watched the games, and I'll have those conversations when it's in the news, like baseball is right now. But then if I get a little deeper into it, I get in over my head. Are you an MMA fan?
A little bit, but I'm like you. We're on the same page. I enjoy watching sports, but I don't really know a ton about it. I'm not a student of sports, I have to say. But there's an opportunity, if you're interested, to be a part owner of a fan-owned sports league that deals with MMA.
Okay. Well, that's coming up. All of that and the news next.